Hi, and welcome to the third season of the Holistic Matters podcast series titled The Holistic Approach to Pet Care. My name is Kara Cradle, and I'll be facilitating your audio journey into the world of nutritional support for pets, the importance of the endocannabinoid system for animals, and the unique components of the veterinary profession. I'm here with Jody Griffiths, who's been a certified veterinary technician for over 20 years. So Jody, you and Dr. Dodson, after talking about the ECS in pets, got a chance to sit down and talk about the unique aspects of the veterinary profession that make normal things like personnel decisions and work-life balance particularly important.
Yes, we did. And we had the opportunity to talk about the unfortunately high rates of suicide in the veterinary profession. A 2018 study published in the Journal of the American Veterinary Medical Association actually showed that veterinarians are 3.5 times as likely to die by suicide compared to people in the general population. So we've talked about that, and there will be a link to that study on the podcast page on holisticmatters.com. And we talked about work-life balance, self-care, creating an effective veterinary office team, and a whole lot more.
Great. Let's listen to that interview now.
Why is it that there is such a high rate of suicide amongst veterinarians?
Well, I think for one thing is that, you know, we go through school, we're taught medicine, we're taught to observe, to diagnose, to treat. And so we're really good at what we do, but we're not taught about the other side of veterinary medicine, which is about compassion fatigue. It's about protecting ourselves. I think that characteristics that make us good veterinarians also set us up for stressors. So we're very compassionate people. We're very empathetic. We have high standards and high integrity. We're very committed and dedicated to doing our job. But by the same token, we let people abuse our time and abuse ourselves. And so as a professional, we need to learn to draw lines and boundaries so that we protect ourselves from being depleted entirely. So it's like having your battery run down to zero and you're uncharged. There's no way you can give more. And people expect that we are in this profession because we love animals. And we do love animals, but they also think that because we love animals that we're going to be there 24/7, seven days a week, and we don't really need money, so we'll probably do it for free if they don't have money. And so those challenges kind of start to wear on you because we feel guilty. We feel guilty if we can't do what we're asked of. But we have to learn to establish those guidelines and protect ourselves from falling to that whole guilt cycle. And I just can't do enough and I can't do what I should do. So I think that's part of it.
So who's really setting those high standards? Do you think the veterinarian is setting that for themselves? Or do you think that's being pushed by clients as well?
I think it's a combination. I think clients expect more from us because we're much more communicative. The clients love veterinarians because we're there, we're taking care of, you know, this beloved member of their family. So they have expectations of us that they wouldn't have of their regular doctor.
Right.
Because they still feel like we're doing it just because we love it, not because we have a profession. So, and partially we have our own, have established our own high standards, and we feel like we need to be there. We feel like we need to let them call us any hour of the day or night. So those are the challenges. We kind of put ourselves, put pressure on ourselves, as well as we let others put pressure on us.
Mm-hmm. How do you use those personal standards and the beliefs that you have as a guiding principle as a veterinarian?
I think it's important to know what your guiding principles are. You have strong beliefs, and so you need to adhere to those. And you need to surround yourself with people, your staff members, your team members, who believe what you believe and embrace your philosophy. And if you do that, then you have a group of people who can help support you in a way that you don't have to do it by yourself, so that you can step away and let that group of people manage your practice, manage your clients. And you know that because they believe what you believe, they're going to make decisions the way you would make decisions. Mm-hmm. And so that gives you that ability to step back and say, you know what, I'm going to take some time to myself. You guys just keep running with the ball and I'll catch up with you at the end of the block.
And that so ties into the importance of work-life balance and how obviously we have a job to do. It's a very important job to do, but we also have family or a life of our own that we need to make sure that we're learning how to balance that. So when you're unplugging yourself from the clinic and from the practice, why is that so important? Why is that taking a break so important to that work-life balance?
Well, it's really critical because you do have to recharge your battery. And by stepping away completely, you allow your body to reset itself, so to speak. You want to rest. You don't want to worry about things. And I challenge people when they take a vacation, don't call the clinic every once a day or twice a day to see how things are going. You have to trust that you've established a good group of people who are going to take care of it for you. And then as you unplug and step away, do it completely, 100%. So it's like if you had your phone charger and it was dead, you would plug it in. You wouldn't keep taking it off the charger and using it, taking it off the charger and using it. Because eventually what happens, the battery goes bad and it doesn't work at all. So if you do that to yourself, your battery is going to go bad a lot quicker than if you fully charge it before you take it off and use it again. And so that's what stepping away is going to do, is fully charge your battery. So when you come back, you're going to be fresh. You're going to have a different perspective. You're going to feel better about things. It's going to help you to start back to zero and not start back at 75%. You need to recharge yourself so that you can start with a full battery and not a almost fully depleted battery.
Mm-hmm. In veterinary medicine, I think we tend to be more approachable. Even as a CVT, I have friends calling or family members calling me all the time, every time one of their dogs is sick or they, you know, the dog does something funny or whatever. And so I can assume that veterinarians are getting those exact same calls all the time as well. So what are some boundaries that you need to set up so that you're not being bothered in the middle of the night or in the middle of your vacation, so that you have that chance to unplug?
Well, and I think that's critical about the unplugging part is when you go on vacation, you let everybody know, I will be out of town for 2 weeks. I leave that on my voice message at home. And if you were being bothered on your personal phone, then leave that voice message on your personal phone and don't answer it. But more importantly, number one rule for me is I do not give my cell phone number out to any of my clients because they will abuse it. And so if you do that, you're opening the door to give them permission to call you whenever they can. And it takes a little bit of training, but you can actually train your staff and you can train your clients to know that that is your boundary and they respect that. A number of years ago, I took a vacation and a client was determined that she had to talk to me and kept hounding the clinic. So they know that usually I'm unavailable. She wanted to have my number to call me. So what I did is I agreed to do a conference call. I had my office call me on the office phone, so she did not have my number. So we did a conference call, and that was the last time she ever did it because she knew how difficult it was to set up, and it wasn't so easy as just give me her phone number, I'll call her. So if you establish those, and I will tell you that client who was always one who always wanted to talk to me from that point forward respected that I had boundaries. And so you have to really take that first step, and it might be difficult, but if you set those boundaries, you will find that people will respect them.
And I feel that a successful veterinarian always has a successful team that's supporting them. Such a key aspect of being a veterinarian is not only having great associates that you're working with, but then also having a great support staff. And sometimes it's just knowing that it's okay to ask for help. So how would you see asking for help as a strength versus a weakness? Because I think some people think that they should be able to do it all and they're afraid to ask for help.
And that's a great point. I think the first step in doing that is that you need to surround yourself with people who are people you can rely on so that you know that if I can't do something, I know someone in my team will. That doesn't make you weak. To me, a weak leader is one who is determined to do something even though they can't and they keep trying. And it starts to become very obvious to everyone that they're not capable. A good leader is one who knows that I'm not good at everything, but I'm going to surround myself with people who have the skills I don't have. And so when I set up my practice and I hire my staff and my doctors, I hire people who have great skills that I don't have. I have no problem saying, here, you do it because you're better at it than I am. And I think that's a sign of a strong leader who's willing to admit and know my limitations and rely on other people to fill in the gaps. It empowers them to do their job with pride, and it empowers me to get the job done in a way that's better than what I can do.
And why is doing your best going to outweigh trying to do it all?
Well, and I think that has to do with depleting your battery. It's like if someone expects you to always be there to do everything they ask you for, you are going to wear yourself down. You cannot do your all for everybody. And a client who asks you to do something is only one of the thousands of clients you have. So think if every single one of them wanted to push you. So my philosophy is that you do the best you can do and you be proud of that and you give them the best you can, but you don't give them everything or else you will have nothing for the next person.
We talked a little bit about team and the importance of team. When you're looking for team members as part of your support staff, what are some of the key personalities or what are you looking for when you're looking to hire somebody in that position?
So the first thing I look for is the right person. And that's kind of ambiguous. But I think so many people hire just to hire warm bodies. And so when you have an opening for a position, I do not just hire the first next person I can find. We take a long time making sure the person fits with our philosophy. We find out through asking questions of them to try to see what their philosophy is. And so we want to fit that right person to that position. And so once we do that, we're able to build a team that we know is going to be in line with who we are, who's going to support our beliefs, who's going to be able to make decisions close to the way I would make decisions. And that empowers me to be able to step away. And that's what helps to keep my sanity. One of the things I recently have started to do, which might be a good suggestion for some, is to do an emotional intelligence test, which is a little different than anything else. It's a way to measure someone's ability to interact with others and to be emotionally mature. So we all know those great people we hire that's did great in the interview, and then 2 months later, you're thinking, this person is crazy, and why did I hire her? So emotional intelligence testing may help weed some of those superficial, crazy people that you may run across.
And because you are an owner of a clinic, and obviously you're very involved in leading that clinic, talk to me a little bit about micromanaging.
So micromanaging is the bane for so many veterinarians. And I also think that's something that creates a lot of stress that isn't necessary. And people who micromanage are, in essence, telling their team, I don't trust you to do your job. So if you have people that you don't trust to do their job, they shouldn't be there. And so if you hire the right people to do their job, my advice to you is let them do it. It will give you more time to do the things you need to do. It will take those little minutia things off your plate that drive you crazy. And it's a process that you have to learn to do, but in the long run, it frees you up so that you can help maintain that balance in your life. And you can go on vacation, not have to call two times a day to make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And so I think micromanaging is probably the hardest thing to overcome for some people, but also the most destructive thing for most people to maintain in their professional life.
Absolutely. What are some ways that you ensure that your staff members are happy and feel appreciated?
I think that one of the best ways is to actually let them be a part of decision-making processes. Listen to what they have to say. They're the ones who are in the trenches doing the work. We have weekly staff meetings, and we allow everyone at that meeting to bring up issues if they're having challenges in doing their job. And it has to do with how the CSRs relate to the technician staff. We bring up the problem. We let them work through solutions. They have buy-in for that. They have the ability to make decisions with guidance. And that keeps them feeling as if they are truly a part of a team and truly a part of making a difference. And we embrace that and we allow them to do their job. And I think that that creates such a good team atmosphere and really dedicated, loyal employees.
We know that there are so many different personalities in people, and sometimes there can be some personalities that are a little tougher to work with and can bring negativity to the team. How do you handle those types of people?
That's the biggest challenge for most veterinarians, because we hate the word fire them. But in reality, when you have some tension, negativity, some in team arguing, people not getting along, the best thing you can do is take that negative, toxic person out of the team. And you might think it's very hard and you might think it's going to create a lot of problem, but what you'll find is it really solves a lot of problems. The dynamics of your team will change in a very positive way. And so it's really hard for us as veterinarians to fire somebody, but you have to really look at what's in the best interest of the whole team. Mm-hmm. And usually it's going to be get rid of the person who's causing the problem. Even if they're your best technician, even if they're your best CSR, you will find that other people will step up to that job and do a better job than you ever imagined they could, because now they have the ability to do it without that toxic person there.
What are some good characteristics of a good leader? And in your practice, I mean, obviously you are the leader, but do you have leaders that are under you as well to kind of take some of that off of you?
Absolutely. And I think it's called delegation. So you have to be able to delegate. And we do have what we call team leaders in each of the areas. And we have responsibilities that they're responsible for. So I delegate responsibilities to people and I hold them accountable for the outcomes. So that means I don't have to be the one that everyone comes to when the air conditioner breaks or, you know, when the when the light doesn't work in the exam room. And it's like I have people who handle that. So I don't worry about the little details. I think a good leader needs to focus on the big picture and make sure that the other people on your team are able to handle the details for you. And occasionally you oversee those, make sure it's been done right. But I think that's the best way to do it.
I've been to your practice. It's a beautiful practice. And I've always thought that if I would go back to practice, I would want to
you can come.
Move by you. So what are some of the things that you have done to set yourself apart from the veterinarian that's maybe a mile or two down the road?
And I think that that's really critical in this day and age when there's so much competition, is you have to set yourself above the other practices. What makes you unique? I have an integrated practice, so we offer a lot of different modalities rather than just conventional medicine. So we have the luxury of being able to supplement conventional medicine with things like acupuncture and chiropractic and homeopathy and Chinese herbs and nutritional supplementation and nutritional counseling. And so I would recommend anyone in practice to find something. It doesn't have to be all of those things. Find something that you can really embrace and make that unique about your clinic. If you find something to make your clinic unique, that will draw people to you that you never imagined. And we do have people who travel as far away as 2 or 3 hours just to come to the practice. And that's really rewarding when you know you're providing something unique and they're not going to go to the practice down the street because they've heard so much about you. So find what's unique, embrace that, and really blossom with it and let it go where it's going to take you.
How, as a veterinarian, do you take pet parent choices, which sometimes we definitely do not agree with, and not let them get to you?
I think that's a really good question because a lot of veterinarians get very frustrated when a pet parent makes a choice and doesn't follow your recommendation. And my advice is that to remember what our job is. Our job is to make recommendations, to give our pet parents options, to give them information to make a decision. It is not our job to make the decision for them. And we have to respect that everybody has different things that can affect a decision. They're the ones who have family pressures or other financial pressures. We don't know what those are. And they're going to make a decision they feel is in the best interest for themselves, their family, and their pet. And it's not our job to judge them or to be angry with them for those choices. So we have to find a way to accept that it's their choice. We support them in their decision, even if it's not what I would do for my pet, but you still be there to support them and be supportive of them through the process and just understand and remind yourself it's their choice to make.
You've been a veterinarian for over 20 years, right?
Wow, yes.
She's very young.
Yes.
If you... And I know you've seen the ins and outs of many different things. If there were a couple pieces of advice that you would give to a new veterinarian, what would you tell them?
I would tell an incoming new veterinarian to be flexible, listen intently, give all you can, not all you have, and preserve your core being, and never stop learning.
Awesome. One very important question for you. Do you have any pets?
I do. I have over 1,000 dogs and over 800 cats because I consider all of my patients to be my pets. And that's the joy of what I do because all of my dogs, especially cats, maybe not all of them, but all the dogs love to come to see me. And so that's my joy is I don't have to take care of them. But I do have 2 cats at home that I love dearly. And if I had more time at home, I'd probably have 10 cats. But right now I have 2 cats.
Awesome.
I love that she considers all of her pet patients to be her own pets. I really hope that my veterinarian feels that way about my dog, and I'm sure most pet parents would share that sentiment.
Me too.
Well, wow, what a meaningful discussion you two had. Thanks, Jody, so much for sharing with us. And thank you, Dr. Dodson, for providing her insight on what it's like to be a veterinarian and to manage your own practice. Next week, we'll be talking to Dr. Patrick Mahaney about how he applies the holistic approach to pet care in his unique practice.